A new report by a member of South Africa's 2030 reading panel found that the number of grade 4 learners who lack good reading comprehension skills has increased to 82%, up from an already high level of 78% 7 years ago.
Reading is the basis of learning, but many children under the age of 10 can't read for comprehension.
We receive children whose language proficiency is really a big challenge.
What we know from research is that the stronger a child's foundation is in literacy in their home language, the easier it is for them to transition to another language.
But to come back to your question about grade 4 readiness, so that's the first crack in the entire educational system, because the language of instruction changes to English only. Now, if you look at the dearth of vernacular language books in South Africa, you don't see it on any bookshelf. We have never seen it on the bookshelf at the retail level, at the supermarket.
So my response there would be, what anyone can do is read with the children in your life. Talk about how important reading is. Read with the children in your life.
Since the end of apartheid in 1994, South Africa has made strides in overhauling its education system. However, significant challenges persist, hindering equitable access to quality education. Issues such as crumbling infrastructure, overcrowded classrooms, and inadequate resources continue to plague many schools, particularly in underprivileged areas. These disparities are huge. While some schools boast well-equipped libraries and digital learning tools, others lack basic necessities like textbooks and safe learning environments. This inequality perpetuates a cycle where children from disadvantaged backgrounds struggle to achieve literacy and numeracy proficiency, limiting their future opportunities. In 2023, only 20% of the country's 25,000 government schools provided a good quality education, while 80% are considered dysfunctional. Researchers suggest that up to 80% of learning occurs through vision, and yet a significant number of children struggle to read simply because they need glasses. A staggering 82% of grade 4 students cannot read for meaning. 25% of matriculants fail their final examinations, and approximately 50% of learners drop out before completing their matric. Even more concerning, less than 5% of children who start primary school go on to earn a tertiary qualification. Access to books is a critical factor in a child's cognitive development. It enhances language skills, stimulates imagination, and lays the groundwork for academic success. Amid these challenges, inspiring stories of individual contribution shine through. Colin and James Bloom, two American-born brothers, have made a significant impact by fundraising to establish two libraries in South Africa in collaboration with Breadline Africa. They collected thousands of books, ensuring children can access literature in their mother tongue. Demonstrating an innovative spirit, they've even utilized AI to write and publish their storybook, making reading more accessible and engaging for younger learners. Recognizing that vision plays a crucial role in literacy, the Bloom brothers have also partnered with the One Sight Foundation to create the Library Vision Clinic project, helping to identify and address the vision challenges that prevent many children from learning effectively. Welcome to Our Voice, Our Future, powered by Breadline. I'm Lemiz Drabani. In this episode, we'll hear from individuals like Derek Carlson, the director of The Little Issue, a quarterly magazine initiated by The Big Issue South Africa, aimed at addressing the critical educational challenges in the country by providing free, curriculum-aligned reading material to young learners. The Little Issue is delivered free to schools, published in 5 languages, and is aligned with the Department of Basic Education's curriculum. aiming to spark young minds and foster a love for reading among grade R to 3 learners across South Africa. We will also hear from Dorit Lowe from BookDash, a South African non-profit organization dedicated to providing children with access to high-quality, diverse, and locally relevant storybooks. Their model focuses on creating and distributing books for free to promote early literacy and encourage a culture of reading in underserved communities. Welcome, Derek and Dorit, to our third episode. So just to lean into some questions with regard to what you are doing in our communities. So in your experience, how does literacy shape a child's future and economic opportunities? Dorit?
Literacy is a foundational skill, which means if you are not literate, you really can't learn in any kind of formal way. It is absolutely crucial, and being literate can change the trajectory of a child's life, and it can change the possibility for them to build a better future for themselves and their family. So, I think it cannot be overstated how important literacy skills are. And what we know is that the earlier children start being exposed to good literacy practices, whether that is reading stories, telling stories, singing songs, having conversations, learning words, the better for that child. So starting really early is crucial, and literacy skills in general are crucial. And they both, I think, are relatively low cost but high impact ways of addressing inequality in our society.
Okay, most definitely. So then what do you think, what are the biggest barriers to literacy in under-resourced schools in South Africa?
So from my perspective as a book publisher, I can say that the statistics around access to books are quite shocking. I have to read this because I can't remember everything off by heart, but only 37% of all South African households has any books in them. And only 35% of households with young children has any children's books in them. So that's basically a third, which means that in two-thirds of the households, there are no books for children. There are no books for reading for joy. There might be some educational texts for older children. There might be some religious texts, but there are no materials that are aimed at children and aimed at reading for joy. And reading for joy has been proven internationally in all the research to be incredibly important to hook a child into reading, into learning. They start thinking of themselves differently. And they start thinking of themselves as a reader and therefore as a learner. And it's so, so important, and yet the access to these crucial resources is not, it's not easy.
Yeah. And not available to our children. And it's actually shocking 37%. And only 30% on the level of the child's ability. And now you understand why they are having problems in reading at school, and the understanding. The concept of reading is completely lost on them because they're not able to practice.
If I can just respond to Dorit of BookDash about the foundational importance of words and reading and listening and hearing and understanding. I mean, it relates to the cognitive development of the brain. So it's common to all kids, just like we all have childhood, adolescence, and then adulthood, whether you're in China or South Africa or in Iceland. The brain develops at a particular rate. And the cognitive qualities of understanding happens in particular stages. And so if you miss that certain stages, to catch up sometimes is almost impossible. In other words, the little human actually carries a deficit with him for a long time. Little things like, children learn visually. However much we want to talk and say and words, it's the number of words, not necessarily just the words, it's the number of words that you accumulate at a certain stage of the development of the child. So pedagogically, evolutionary, biologically, these things have to synchronize. And once you find cracks in the relationship between these certain key elements, you find what we have in South Africa today, that a large proportion of kids who enter grade R never exit at matric. Because we, and then you add in all the other impediments, which I'm sure we'll talk about later on, that come in their way as barriers, and the system doesn't allow them to overcome it. And they just carry on carrying this baggage with them. So it's a snowballing effect that we haven't really stopped at this point in time. And all the research proves that through polls and expert reading panel and so on, you know.
Just to add to that, I think one of the other big problems that we have is that there's a general misunderstanding, I think, about reading in South Africa, and that is that reading is a school-based activity and should start when a child goes to school. Nothing could be further from the truth. In an ideal world, children should be read stories to from when they're born. And the reason for that, I mean, there's so many reasons, but language is acquired by through stories, through listening, through speaking, through interaction. And parents in general seem to think that reading is a school-based activity, but and don't understand the crucial role that they have to play as their children's first teachers. And getting them used to stories and used to books and reading with them, putting them on their laps, having that moment of bonding and intimacy, which is so good for socio-emotional learning, and that kind of forms the basis for many other things. So for me, another barrier is just our understanding in general around how to interact with our children before they go to school.
So just to add on to what you said, teachers walk into the class with the assumptions that parents have read to their children and that they know what a book is. And so although they put great emphasis on literacy because it is part of their learning process, but they have the assumption that they are, the learners actually come into the school with prior knowledge. But in our township schools, that is not the that does not happen, because our parents, as Derek so rightly said, are also, some of our parents are also illiterate, and so they cannot help their children. And so it is another stumbling block for our children, because they are coming to school to learn, but they are actually a blank slate, where the teachers are of the assumption that they are coming in and that there is something already that has been built from home. And that is also why our children do not fare very well in our township schools. Can you share a story of a child or a community that has been transformed by access to reading material?
Okay. I've got many, but I'll choose two.
Okay.
The one was from one of the partner organizations that are recipients of our free books that we give out at BookDash. We send books in the language of the community to organizations that already work in the community. So they are often ECD organizations or literacy organizations. And so they already work with young children and their families, and they then do the onwards distribution of the books, because we want children to own books. That's what BookDash's vision is around. And one of our distribution partners gave us feedback. We get lots of feedback from everyone all the time, but this one really stood out for me, where when they visited the families, there was one family where when they asked the child, they couldn't see the books anyway. They said, "Where are your books?" And the child, little one, 4 years old, ran to the bed and lifted the mattress. And there the books were, together with like the ID documents and the SASSA card. So it's like a really treasured, really very treasured possession. And I think, yes, things are bad, but I think there are moments of such immense joy and positivity that we hear about, and how transformational it can be when there are resources for positive family practices. And I think that is what books in the home can enable, together with really good like tips about, okay, do this. Read at the same time every day with your young child. Look at the books. Doesn't matter if you can't read. It's okay. Talk about what you see in the pictures. So in other words, just very simple practical guidance that any family can take on board. And a family has a broad definition. You know, it's not a nuclear family we're talking about necessarily. It's often a granny with children or older siblings. You know how what our realities are. But it can really be transformational. And then in terms of a community that's been transformed, Buktash was part of a five-year intervention in an area in the Eastern Cape that's very underserved, together with WordWorks and Nalibali, two other literacy nonprofits. And so we each played a specific role, and there was an external evaluation of the project. And it was found that books in the project, there was training, there was reading clubs, there was support, there was all kinds of things, but the number of books in the home was a predictor of how well the child did in the kind of assessments that were done at baseline and at end line. So it was found that children with more books at home showed greater improvement over the course of the intervention. And so for us, that's very heartening, because it's not difficult to put books into households. Mm. It's actually not difficult. There needs to be money made available, but we've got a really good system. They're fantastic distribution networks already. So I will always sing the same song, is that we must just make sure that there are books that reach families.
Can I just touch on the little issue now, Derek, with you? And how does the little issue address the educational challenges in South Africa, particularly the statistic that 78% of our grade 4 children cannot read for meaning?
Yeah, that's also, it's all languages, am I correct? Or is it mainly, yeah, it's all languages. Just so it's quite an important fact.
Yeah,
because people think it's mainly the vernacular languages, but it's not true. Yeah. It's English and Afrikaans. So we're talking about suburban schools, yeah. Model C schools. We're not just talking about poor township schools. Yeah, I just want to make sure that is stated up front. So what Dorette and I are describing, you know, is applicable to middle-class suburban families and schools. Obviously, the chances of success are greater because of all the positive facts that we know about economic means to acquire. Maybe mom can stay at home while dad is working, have more time, et cetera, you know. But to come back to your question about grade 4 readiness, so that's the first crack in the entire educational system, because the language of instruction changes to English only. Now, if you look at the dearth of vernacular language books in South Africa, you don't see it on any bookshelf. We have never seen it on a bookshelf at the retail level at the supermarket. Business, you know, you might have had a Bona magazine. What was the other famous one? Drum, maybe. That was in English, correct. But they did do a one in Zulu as well. But anyway. So to come back to the question, we aim the magazine at supporting grade 4 readiness in that we have 5 languages in the magazine, all the key subjects. But the thing is, the kids don't know it's schoolwork, because we've taken the view that competition for cognitive development in the modern world is not the textbook or the classroom, it's the television screen and the phone screen. And so we present everything in a hugely bright, colorful, graphic-looking, fun way that doesn't look like schoolwork, actually. And so what has happened, and we took that right at the beginning of the invention of the magazine, took that decision. And we've done research recently, if you need to use the research on any of your channels, you can let me know. I can provide that for you. Where, I mean, this one little girl says that to her, the colors. Why do you like the magazine? It's the colors. So you're talking about grade 4 readiness, but you've got to talk to the fundamentals of what's actually happening in the development of the brain, cognition, understanding, and so on. And that's where we pitch, that's where we see our contribution is for the little issue. In the different languages. So if you do have a mother tongue and someone who's in grade 5 is in your family can read English, you can actually start get the same story, but there are different languages. So the one story might be isiXhosa in English, and then the next story might be Afrikaans and isiZulu, and so on. So at the level of multilingualism, which surprisingly has proven those human beings who are fluent in more than one language are way more creative than those who are monolingual. And so, you know, if you think about it at the great art level, we have those precious minds who are multilingual or home language monolingual, but they hear English at school all the time, even though they have their own mother tongue at home. And so by the time they come to grade four, the expectation of how the system is designed in South Africa is that suddenly you go from mother tongue to English. So what's in between? It's the kind of stuff that BookDash does, WordWorks does. What we do is that we're trying to create the tools for them to grab onto meaning, to understand what they're looking at or how they can describe. So that's how we approach it from a design point of view. Dorette, you guys, you grade your books?
No, our books are not graded, but perhaps just to link to what you've said, what we know from research is that the stronger a child's foundation is in literacy in their home language, the easier it is for them to transition to another language. And that's why we publish our books in 11 official South African languages. We've got a catalogue of more than 800 books that are available. And about 60% of the books that we've distributed, we've printed and distributed almost 5 million books so far. And about 60% of them are not in English. And about 20% of them are wordless, which is books that can go into any language context. Yeah. Because, and the books that can go into any language context are so useful because then the adult who reads with a child tells the story, reads the story in their home language. Because the more the concepts are kind of laid down in your home language, the more you can understand the world that you see around you through your home language, the easier it is to transition to English. And that's why I think home language for us is incredibly important. And we think it is a way to address the problems that we see at grade four level, is if that home language foundation is stronger. And obviously also then in grade one, two, and three, that the language that will become the LOLT is introduced very thoroughly and very well. That might help at grade four level.
So do you think that at grade four level, it is the learners are far too young to be transitioning into English? And at which grade do you think they should be transitioning?
It's not a matter of age, it's how they've been coached into, prepared for that moment, you see. And then if you look at what happens in the classroom, and we've done research in the class as well, there's a teacher readiness issue. We have grade four readiness, but you also have a teacher readiness issue. And that's covered in the expert reading panel that looks at literacy at primary school and at high school. And that's one of the issues around the level of skill of teachers. And then also on the grade four readiness, obviously grade R to three is just three subjects, numeracy, literacy, and life skills. And those are also in different languages. So we are hoping that just like BookDash tries to get books into schools, but they distribute via the existing channels, we also are hoping that when the kid goes home, she takes the subjects with them, and then it can impact on the parents' levels. And we've got feedback as well, where parents are starting to read Little Issue for themselves, by the way.
Okay. So can you share the feedback which you receive from parents and educators about BookDash as well as the Little Issue? And the influence on the reading habits of the child.
Yes, yes. I'm happy to share because we had very interesting research feedback. Research that included a lot of visits to homes and conversations with caregivers and parents. And what we found was that if there are books in the home, books are introduced, right? Book dash books. Now, in this case, that was what the research was about, but the same would be true for any book. And at school, at ECD level, there is really good like story time reading sessions. In other words, books are experienced by the child as being fun, engaging. You know, they look forward to story time. It's something, it's a highlight of the day. Then they go home and there are books at home. What the kids then do is they, and this is what our researchers found, not our researchers, it's independent research. They then like enthusiastically like demand almost of their parents or their caregivers, please read this book to me. Read this book to me, because they know that it's a really fun experience. Then the parents read the stories to the children, sometimes reluctantly initially, because they think, what, you know, you're 4 years old. Why do I read a book to you? To my point of parents thinking of reading as a school activity. And then consistently we hear that parents are surprised by how their child can engage around the story. They're surprised about the fact that their child is clever. That's the word that they often use. I didn't know my child was that clever. I didn't know my child could talk about the pictures. I didn't know my child could predict what was going to happen next. And then they find, the parents find that reading so enjoyable that it becomes this kind of virtuous circle almost. The more they read with their children, the more enjoyable it is, the more they read with their children. And the child obviously benefits from that. Yes. And also the family in terms of literacy practices and like, yeah. So that's a piece of feedback that we find so encouraging, because it means that habits can be, behaviors can be changed.
Yes. Mm. It starts with a book and a child.
Yes.
Yeah.
And an adult.
And yeah, always an adult.
And
reads
and chats. And, yeah.
Yeah, so one of the principles we embed in the magazine, but it's not really obvious, is the Montessori principles. Quite a few, the 4 of the 10 Montessori principles we've embedded in the actual presentation in the magazine, with the realization that an elder sibling can read to a younger sibling. And so that there are certain entree or entry points in the stories and so on, so that that can happen. To Dorette's point about, you know, a reader and a publication and a child. So that's the one important thing. The other important thing for us is, for Little Issue now, is that we've taken also the principle of auto-education out of the Montessori philosophical system and experimented it with in the magazine, so that the auto-education means you can learn by yourself on your own. And so some of the stories, not stories, but exercises, there are puzzles, there are games, there are different stories, it's drawing, it's sketching, it's writing, it's numbers, it's everything, right? Because it's 48 pages divided by 3 subjects, so we can pack quite a bit in the magazine. And so, because we have an editorial advisory team that are foundation experts in the DBE system, and we've learned quite a lot from them, right? So because we are not the experts in this space. We're the catalyst. So we only work with the experts and we learn from them. We do not pretend that we're the experts, yeah. And so we've embedded a lot of those learnings from Montessori, from the DBE foundational specialists, from media people, of how do we package the content in relation to TV and to what level do we go for grade 4. And then that one thing I want to add is that we don't assume that the readers or consumers of the magazines are at the same level of learning. So there's something there for the kids who are advanced and there's something there for the kids who are not up to scratch yet. So that ECDs actually access this magazine because it goes down to the foundation phase below grade R. And then teachers in the school uses the magazine, even though the curriculum is grade R to 3, grade 4 and 5 use the magazines because any cohort is not homogeneous and the same thing. And so we're very sensitive to allow the magazine to reflect that as well, so that it kind of hopefully scoops up as many of the learners as possible, even those who feel a bit, not reluctant, not equipped, because they're not skilled enough. So we allow entry points for them also to at least consume something, you know? And then they learn something, and then next time they grow and grow and grow, and so on.
So what are the challenges in ensuring that books are culturally relevant and available in multiple languages, Dorette?
For us, that's a very important factor because, you know, if a child doesn't see themselves in a book that they read, then it's very hard to kind of, you know, engage with it. If it's all foreign, I mean, that's one of the problems with books that are imported or donated from other countries, that they don't reflect the worldview, or not the worldview, the world that the child actually knows. So for us, that's really important. And how we do that at Book Dash, how we try and work towards that is to have people on our creative panels from all kinds of different backgrounds, different language backgrounds, different cultural backgrounds, and they bring the stories and they bring the way in which they see the world, and we create the books in that way. So our books are really quite authentically African storybooks. And then in terms of the languages, it's incredibly important. As I said before, we translate our books into 11 official South African languages. And really exciting is that we now have a partnership with the Hand Lab at Stellenbosch. And they are translating our whole catalogue of more than 200 books into South African Sign Language, which is our 12th official language. So I cannot overstate how important it is for us to have books that are culturally representative and language accessible for children.
Mm.
So how has digital technology changed the way children access and engage with reading material?
Oh, don't get me started on this topic.
You can start.
Oh, my goodness.
It's going to take more than 5 minutes.
Now, I'll be definitely brief. I'm one of those who say I'm into human intelligence, not artificial intelligence. I'm an HI person, not an AI person. That's the one thing. I'm just saying this so that you know where I'm coming from.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm about teaching people how to unfollow the machine. Because if you look at what's happening to learning, the automated aspect of learning and how media is becoming narrower and narrower in its worldview, we are in serious danger of creating clones forever. So I love the magazine because you got to pick up a pen or a pencil and you got to write on this crayon-friendly paper, and we tell the kids it's crayon-friendly, so mess, and make a mark and spot the difference and put the X down. And complete the sounds, apple, and then you must write in the P and the P, if it's the P sound, you know? So it's analog. It's all about the analog. So we don't do a digital version of it. We used to animate content of it, and then the funder walked away. It's a way to stop. So we had our own little YouTube channel. I think it's about 5 episodes on there, and that stopped like 2 years ago. But we are not going into the digital space because of the Book Dashes of the world, and many others are in that space already. We're all about in the analog, the hand, the eye, the pencil, and the paper, where you actually, and the brain obviously is involved when you got the pen and the paper and the hand, not just a screen, a flickering screen, and your eyes. A big difference between the two in terms of actual physical engagement and the process of learning. So we stay away from that part. And those who do and can master it, I say well done. But we on the other end of the spectrum.
Yeah, so perhaps I can just come in here and say that our books are published digitally first. And they're published under an open license, which means that anyone around the world can adapt them for their own needs. They can translate them into languages that I've never heard of, and people do. They can animate them, they can do. So that's the kind of digital lives of our books. But we know from research that especially for young children, preschool children, and I would say foundation-based children, physical books are best. And it's incontrovertible. It's not really up for debate. physical books are really better for learning. It's many of the things that you've said, but it's that physical act of turning the page, understanding that you read from left to right, crossing the midline. All those incredibly important developmental things are supported through physical books, not digital reading. So it is transforming reading, but I think from our perspective of really, really young children, physical books are definitely best. Digital reading is also, it's difficult in South Africa because you need, you know, you need Wi-Fi or you need airtime or data to access digital resources. That's not something that's readily available to most households. Whereas, you know, a Bookdash book that is available for 15 Rand is like a resource that you've got forever. Mm-hmm. And the child can just, you know.
And it doesn't require batteries.
Thank you so much, Derek and Dorette, for this very insightful conversation and sharing of your experiences. But just to end off our last question, what are your simple actions that communities can take to foster a culture of reading?
Oh, me? Communities. That's quite a big word because, you know, it's school, it's family, it's adults, it's family. Maybe I'll start just with at the community level. So I can give you one real-life example. So because the Big Issue produces the Big Issue magazine, which adults buy in and around the suburbs and metros of Cape Town, and they're from the townships themselves. And so we've encouraged them to buy the Little Issue magazine. And it was 25 Rand, and we'd give it to them for half price. But even 12 Rand 50 was too much. So if you ask me about communities, it must be about everything but price. And if you can find reading, and a lot of NGOs who have cracked it, they've got reading coaches, got reading circles, they've got volunteer readers, and so on and so on. But it's not at scale yet. But if you have some funding, one can actually scale that. I'm sure you can. But broadly speaking, at the it takes in the school system, but takes a, it's a difficult question to ask from my point of view.
So I'll keep it short and simple and small, because I think it starts in the home. So my response there would be, but anyone can do. Is read with the children in your life. Talk about how important reading is. Read with the children in your life. You know, whether it is a magazine, whether it's a newspaper, whether it's pictures, whether it's a book, read. Because that is really, I think, how, because, you know, the core of the community is the family, et cetera, et cetera. And that has a ripple effect.
Nice. Yes. Well said.
Read and read. Thank you. Literacy is the foundation of a child's future. If you're listening and want to be part of the change, here's how you can help. Donate books, especially in mother tongue languages. Support organizations like Bookdash and The Little Issue that work to provide books and literacy support to children. And advocate for literacy programs and ensure that funding is protected. Every child deserves the right to read, to learn and to dream. Thank you for joining us today. Let's keep the conversation going. Until next time, I'm Lemise Rabani, your host, and this is Our Voice, Our Future.